pull my curtain close.
You want a little wisdom? Listen to Rabbi Brian. Rabbi Brian!
And I'm going to say hi to Alex and to Emily and to Ellen, who I've already seen on the screens. And Gina, I see. Well, I don't see you, Gina, but I know you're joined. And Gabe and James. And over here in Facebook land, David Oliver and Luis and Adam. Adam Milstein. Hey, Adam. And Candy, who's in Israel. And Scott Hitchcock. And Alvin Shank, hi, welcome. Welcome to Rabbi Brian's Garden. We just, this is our second to last of season one. I'm doing one more next week. And then after next week, I'm taking a break and I'm have a holiday. But I'm so glad that you're here. So glad that you've joined. And we were just having a discussion and I want to bring that right to mind. Emily, if you don't, you got a dog right behind you. That's a beautiful giant dog.
That's Jack.
Wow. Emily was saying that she couldn't find a congregation that she felt comfortable with, that felt like was one to join where she lives.
I thought about maybe even a synagogue or something.
Right.
But I don't know if they let me in or not.
Well, I could write you a note. This is how I'd like you to look at it. They would be honored to have you. Any place that you walk in would be honored to have you, or should be honored to have you. And it's a really good vetting system. If they're not honored and excited to have you there, that's not the kind of place you want to be. And I go back and I said off the cuff kind of, Emily, start your own. And Alex, I know I told you years ago, start your own. Look at what I'm doing. I have an internet-based congregation of a few thousand people because I had the harebrained idea that I could do it. They did a study with fish. I can't remember what kind of fish it was, but scientists do squirrely things, and they bred the schooling mechanism out of the fish. Oh, hey, Kathleen, glad you're joining. They bred the schooling mechanism out of this certain kind of fish that normally schooled. And so they got a whole bunch of fish who normally follow each other around, and they bred out the schooling mechanism in some. And they introduced one of these fish. Sounds like I'm telling a Jesus parable, but I'm not. They took one of these fish who no longer knew how to school. They took one of these non-schooling fish and they put it in with all the fish who know how to school. And you want to know what happened? Oh, hey, Ellen. You want to know what happened? All the fish followed that one. Now, I don't know if the one fish who didn't know how to school got annoyed that everyone started following it around. I don't know if all the other fish got, I don't know anything else except the one fish who didn't know how to school got followed by all the other fish. Now, this is not a metaphor. This is just a story. This is something that happened. If you start your own religious group, and really, why can't you? Why can't you invite people over to your home? I'm going to start doing a service here in Portland once a quarter. Now, is there anything that's going to stop me? My nerves is the only thing I can think of. So do your own. And this is going to run me straight into, we had two topics for today, and we only have about 21 minutes because I have how old is he? He's about 4 months old, who's going to come over and play with me for a little while. So I'm going to have to run us a little short. But this leads me straight into a topic. Everyone, if you look at your hand and here, put up two fingers like this. You got your index finger and your thumb. And you think of your index finger as one person on an island. And you think of your thumb as the other person on the island. And now I ask you, does index finger have the right to convince thumb of its theology, right? They each have their own God beliefs. Does index finger have the right to try to tell thumb what it should believe? And we all know the answer is no. I'm going to put up all my other fingers. Now there are five people on the island. Four of them all believe the same thing. Thumb doesn't. Do these four have the right to tell Thumb what to believe? Let me take a little time out to say hi to Luis, who's now on Facebook, and Adam, and oh, my favorite Jew, Mr. Rodriguez, and Sean Dillon. Welcome. Glad you guys are all here. Do four people have the right to try to convince the fifth person of their theology? And of course, the answer is still no. And now expand those fingers out to a billion. And there are a billion Catholics who maintain the creed that God is love and somehow God is constantly disappointed in us. Do they have the right to make me believe that?
Yeah.
Of course not.
But they will try.
Oh, they can try. They can do anything they want. I got free will. You know, Alex, there's a great word. Oh, and hi, John. Glad you joined us. You know the word heretic? It comes from the Greek word heresis, which means choice. Isn't that great? To be a heretic means you chose otherwise. That's what a heretic is somebody who has chosen otherwise. Hold on one second. I got to do a little.
I see three of you, Brian.
Say that again, Emily.
I'm seeing three little boxes.
Yeah, my internet connection was unstable, so I got rid of, I had to boot up through my phone as well, which I just turned off. So there should just be me regular style and then me on the wide angle camera, because I thought it was kind of neat to have a wide angle so you could see. I don't know. I've never done this before, but that's kind of my point. What is the seat of anyone's spiritual authority? And our topic for today, we had two topics for today. One was going to be mistakes, and one was going to be God. And we're talking, we straight into the God topic, which makes sense a little bit to me, because that was the email, the newsletter that I sent out this last week was about the G-O-D word. So mistakes and G-O-D. So here's a question to ponder. What this is, what I'm about to tell you is based off the work of Alan Watts, who is a fantastic guru who insisted he was not a guru, and I just loved him. Here's the thought. What is the source of anyone's spiritual authority? Now, what is my source? What I have some spiritual authority over you who are listening because you have given it to me. That's it. I am a source of spiritual authority because you have given it to me. I have a title, but so what? So other people have said that I'm a spiritual authority, but does that mean that you agree? Just because the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion says that I am a rabbi? Because the Pacific Area Reform rabbis say I'm a dues-paying member? Does that mean I have spiritual authority? All you have for it is my word that I'm a spiritual authority, and you have your belief that I am a spiritual authority. But that's it. The seat of my spiritual authority is you. And if I have 45,000 followers, or I just have one, what I say? Does it make it any more true if there are 4,500,000 people who are following me, which would be 4.5 million, right? I think I got the math a little confused there. The seat of spiritual authority has to be only from one place. And so, Emily, can I ask you a question? Besides the logistics, is there any reason you can't start a fellowship, a church? For those of you who are on audio only, Emily very adorably is looking to the left, looking to the right, trying to see where the answer, and it looked a little bit the way her head was moving in slow motion, like she was going, no, there's no reason I can't be a, but you didn't say anything, so I had to narrate.
Okay, that's, no, so the answer's no.
The answer's no. You are your own, the source, there's Jewish tradition teaches, Jewish tradition teaches that there's an infinite number of gates to the Garden of Eden. And that every person has a gate exactly the shape of their soul. And the tradition continues that should one person ever go through the door of another, all who are in the Garden of Eden will be expelled for all time.
Ooh. Ooh.
Let me unpack that for a moment. Who gives a fuck if it's a Jewish story or not? Maybe I just made that up. Does it make a difference? It's a true story if it resonates with you. And of course it resonates, it makes sense. Okay, so let's get to the G-O-D word. Does anyone have the right to tell you who G-O-D is? And they have the right to tell you who God is to them.
Yeah.
And you have, I'll tell you one of my favorite stories. It's a story of Rabbi Susia. You might know this story. And the story goes that Rabbi Susia was dying. And Susia's dying, and he says to his disciples, look at him, because he's looking all of a sudden panicked. And his disciple says, Susia, why are you worried? He says, I'm worried that I will be questioned by the Holy One. And the Holy One will say, why were you not as wise as King Solomon? And the disciples say, oh, but you're not as wise as King Solomon. And Susia says, I'm worried that God will say, why were you not as patient as Moses? And Susia regains his composure, and he says, that's not what I'm really worried about. What I'm truly worried about is God will have said, Susia, why are you not more like Susia? Mm-hmm. Everyone loves that story. It's a classic rabbinic story. You can ask any rabbi. Can you tell me the story of Susia? And they'll tell you some version of that story that ends with, why were you not more like Susia? What my favorite, oh, and hi to John and to Arthur Turetsky and Broad, who just joined. I wanted to say hi. Nobody is upset in that story. Everyone likes the story. Why were you not more yourself? The thing that no one, I've told the story for years. And then one day I realized something about the story. Nobody ever says, excuse my language, but I'm going to use a curse word here for emphasis. Nobody ever says about that story, who the fuck was Susia that he could put words into God's mouth? Nobody ever says, how does Susia know that God's going to say that? And I think of it that same way of who are you to not say this is what God wants? Who am I not to say that? And I think, not I think, I know. I know that I, as rabbi, if I don't speak more about what God speaks about, how much harder it will be for you, Emily, for you, Alex, for you, Ellen, for you, Gina, for you, Kathleen, for you, Gage, for you, Broad, for everyone else whose name I haven't said. How much harder it will be for you. So I'm going to say this. God has told me, open parentheses, as best as I can understand what that means, close parentheses. Stop being schmucks. God has told me, open parentheses, as best as I can understand what that word means, close parentheses. Go out and be kinder. You got to put the things in parentheses because I don't want anyone to think I'm saying anything other than what I'm trying to say. And that God word has so much baggage associated with it that people get really confused. Okay, that's the God topic. I have a lot more to say on the God topic, but I also really want us to talk about mistakes. Before we do that, let me open up the chat window, see if anybody has added anything in the chat window. Is there anything I originally, when I started this Rabbi Brian's Garden, I thought this would be a very popular segment called Ask the Rabbi, to see if anyone has any random questions that they want to ask me. What it seems like is most people would rather email me their questions and I write answers. But is there anyone in Interland, anyone on Facebook right now who has a question, ask the rabbi that they, you know, let's do this live. I'll give you a moment.
I wish there were more faces out there. I could see more faces there.
It's a quiet day on in the faces, but we got, I can tell you, we got people listening. So, Alberto is listening, but he's on Facebook. Oh, they might be watching on Facebook, but we can't see them on Facebook. Oh. But I did figure something out about the Facebook feed, is that there are a lot of people for whom, like, it's maybe too intimate to put their cameras on. I have a whole bunch of people who don't have their cameras on, or maybe they're at work and they got an earbud in, so they're just listening. I think it's an odd thing to be at work. And you have to have a certain amount of cojones to say to your boss, hey, I got a religious thing to do from 10 to 10:30 on Tuesday mornings. I would love to sign a note. First person to ask me to sign a note that says, yes, I'm running a service on Tuesday mornings and you have a religious obligation to be there. I would love to write that note. I think that's fantastic. Okay. So I guess we got no questions coming in. Let's talk about mistakes. I love the topic of mistakes. It's linked in with the topic of forgiveness. I learned the most about the topic of mistakes. Oh, and Anderson March just joined. That's fantastic. I learned the most from the topic about mistakes from three different people. One, a woman named Catherine Schultz. She has actually written the book about mistakes. She has a PhD in mistakes or something like that. Two, I've learned the most about mistakes from my children. And three, I've learned the most about mistakes from myself. Catherine Schultz put a cognitive understanding about mistakes out there. And I want to explain this because I think it's just the kind of thing we should all know. She asks a group of people, she says, what does it feel like when you make a mistake? So what does it feel like when you make a mistake? And the people who she asked, they usually give an answer such as, Kathleen, can I call on you? I don't know if your volume is up or not. I just know that you're there. That's faith. Talk about faith. There's a name. It says Kathleen. No? Okay. All right. Alex, you're on mute right now. Emily, I know you're waiting on a call, Alex. So when you have to run, run. Emily, what's it feel like when you make a mistake?
Embarrassment.
Shame. Right? That's the usual answer. It doesn't feel good. It feels shame. And Catherine Schultz, what she says, and this just goes, she says, you actually answered a different question than the one I asked. You answered the question, what does it feel like when you find out you made a mistake? What you feel like when you make a mistake is nothing, because you don't know you're making the mistake. At the time you're doing it, you don't think this is wrong. It's only when you realize that you have erred that you, so it's kind of like a meta thing. She asked people, what does it feel like when you make a mistake? And you make a mistake in answering it, because what you feel like, she explains it like a wily coyote. Remember, he would run after the roadrunner and he would get to the edge of the cliff, did it like this, and he would go about 6 other feet, and then he turns and he faces the camera and then he falls. And you don't feel like you made a mistake until you're off the cliff already. And I'll give an example of it from my children. I will be writing about this at some point, but a week ago Saturday, I'm walking to a pizzeria. Emmett is under my left hand. I have my hand over his head. Annie is under my right hand. And we're just, you know, it was not planned. It's just what we wound up doing as we're walking to pizza. I have Emmett here, Annie here. And we're walking, and I say, close your eyes, close your eyes. And they close their eyes, and I walk with them, and they have their eyes closed. And then the game changes, and I keep my hands exactly where they are, and we change the game. So now I close my eyes, and I'm walking up 41st Street towards Sandy, towards the pizzeria. And I have my eyes closed, and I'm walking, and it is amazing because I'm walking, and there's a sensation that I've not had, which is walking at a full speed with no visual input. And I'm thinking about blind people, and does the novelty wear off? And I assume it does. And I'm thinking of this koan that my friend Dave had sent me from Krishnamurti. And I'm thinking about the koan, and I'm getting some kind of answer to this question that I've never gotten before, because my eyes are closed while I'm walking, and it's fantastic. And that's when my children walked me into a telephone pole. Emmett had moved into the street, and I walked straight into a telephone pole at a full clip. I found myself, I still have a little bit of a cut here. I found myself in the parking lot of a furniture store. That's the next thing I remember. I didn't black out, but I don't remember. I didn't collapse, but I don't remember until I'm in the parking lot. And I say to Jane, I say, I am so disappointed in our children. Because I knew, I've been working with this for a long time. You know, I taught high school for a long time. And when I used to get mad at the students to say, why did you drop a negative in the fourth part of that problem? And the kid would be like, I didn't mean to drop a negative. I just dropped a negative. It was like, you just make the mistake. I realized, because I've been working with this, and I would encourage everyone who's listening to understand when other people do something wrong, it's probably just a mistake and a lack of judgment. Emmett did not mean to hurt me. I saw him from the other side of that parking lot standing there, and he had his hands on, he was just freaking out. If he was laughing, I would have had a different reaction, I'm sure. But he was upset. What had he done? He had simply made a mistake, a really bad one. But I made a mistake. And so I'm gonna ask us, because we're gonna have to wrap us up very soon, that in this upcoming week, we spend as much time as we can seeing that the errors that are done are not intentional, shameful, they're just mistakes. They're just not the way we wanted things to go. All right, that's kind of deep. I will follow up by saying, I sat with Emmett the next day in the living room, and I said, dude, we got to talk about that thing. And he sat on my lap, and I said, listen, you're 12, and I've given this a lot of thought. And in Judaism, we have a rule that when you turn 13, you become responsible. So if you do this to me next year, I said, it was my mistake for trusting you. You made a mistake in not knowing, foreseeing it, and it was my mistake in giving you that responsibility before you were ready for it. I said, next year you do the same thing, I will let you sit in the guilt much longer. He said that didn't seem fair. He might be right. I don't know. Anyhow. Let me sum up and end this episode. Oh, and hi, Aaron, and hi, Ari, and hi, Ryan. Oh, fantastic. Let me end today's Rabbi Brian's Garden by saying, I thank you. I hoped that this has encouraged you, empowered you to be your own spiritual authority. And I hope that you also have learned that mistakes happen, and that we have to forgive others, and we have to forgive ourselves when we make them. And I'll wrap all that up with a big four-letter word, amen.
Amen. And all they have to do with a mistake is correct it.
You gotta correct it.
But that doesn't make your head hurt any less.
I took a lot of Tylenol, and I got the people at the furniture store brought out an ice bag for me, and the pizzeria gave me another ice bag. You know, being mad would have really felt good in the short term. It would have done a lot to dissipate my pain, to have someone to blast with all the anger that I had. But I'm old enough and wise enough to know that long term, that wasn't the right move. And I'm blessed enough that I have been practicing this enough that I didn't do it. Okay, I gotta go play with Leo, my little friend. I thank you guys for all joining me today. Please email me. I'm gonna hang up here, but you can keep.
If you want a little wisdom, listen to Rabbi Brian. Rabbi Brian.